From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to the program. We have a big interview lined up to start the show today with one of the world's foremost leaders on religious freedom to talk about the president's historic summit with North Korea and specifically what it means for the underground church and persecuted Christians in North Korea. But of course, we also want to start by wishing a very happy Father's Day to all of the dads out there. There's a quote that I saw this week from the late great Billy Graham, who said, "A good father is one of the most unsung, unpraised, unnoticed, and yet most valuable assets in our society." And I think that is absolutely true. And there is a fantastic new article up on the NFA website that everyone should read at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org on the irreplaceable role that fathers play in the life of a child. And it's filled with really important and fascinating research and data on the impact of fathers in the home. It's a fantastic read. And another one of my favorite quotes from Billy Graham is when he said that the greatest legacy one can pass on to one's children and grandchildren is not money or other material things accumulated in one's life, but rather a legacy of character and faith. And I love that quote because it has been so true in my life. So happy Father's Day, Dad, and happy Father's Day to all the dads out there listening today. The talk across the country and around the world this past week has been the historic summit between President Trump and North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un, marking the first time sitting leaders of the two countries have ever met face-to-face. This was a surreal moment to watch take place, and we don't know everything that was said between the two leaders, but while there has been no shortage of news coverage and endless speculation about what the future holds for relations between the United States and North Korea, often missing from the discussion is mention of the estimated 300,000 Christians who face persecution and even death under the regime of Kim Jong-un. 50 to 120,000 Christians may already be confined to prison camps in North Korea. What is life like for them in the shadows of a brutal regime? Would denuclearizing North Korea change conditions for the Christian church? And what will it take to bring religious freedom to North Korea? I'm pleased to be joined now by Dr. David Curry, President and CEO of Open Doors USA, an international ministry to persecuted Christians across the world. Dr. Curry, I know you actually just recently returned from Singapore, where the summit with North Korea took place, so we're very grateful to have you with us on the program today.
It's nice to be with you and your listeners there in Nebraska.
Dr. Curry, as I mentioned, you were actually in Singapore during the summit. Can you first just give us your reaction to what took place between President Trump and Kim Jong-un and what your role was while you were in Singapore?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I think it's important to recognize Open Doors is a Christian ministry that supports persecuted Christians. We're not a partisan group. So what we look at when we're looking at international events is how it affects religious freedom for individuals around the world, particularly Christian minorities in countries wherever they may be, but in Asia, the Middle East, and of course North Korea, which is the most difficult place for Christians, according to our research. What we were trying to do is to raise attention, and we have been doing this for some time with the Trump administration, as to the role of persecution and religious liberty, persecution of Christians and religious liberty in North Korea. So prior to the summit, we had been in contact with them, with some of our partners, and in some cases directly with the administration and the State Department, challenging them that human rights needs to be part of any nuclear negotiation. Say, well, why is that the case? Why are those two connected? Well, when you have a nuclear negotiation, you may say that somebody wants to disarm, like in North Korea, it takes a long time, 10 years, 15 years, to dismantle some of these programs. And verifying is difficult. So sometimes you're 2 or 3 years down the road and you find out, guess what? They haven't complied. They've shifted resources around. They're hiding this, they're hiding that. This is the difficulty. But if we're really talking about how are we going to get North Korea not to disarm, not to only disarm, but to be part of the international community, then human rights is a big part of that, and it's easily verifiable. So, for example, one of the recommendations we made is that when we get into in-depth negotiations with North Korea, we say that we would like, within the first 30 or 60 days, to have the UN or some of these committees of inquiry to have access to the labor camps. There are 7 or 8 labor camps in North Korea where Christians are held, where dissidents are held, where people who object in some way to what's going on are held for generations, not just for a month or two. So many of them die there. And North Korea is going to have to resolve human rights issues like that if they're going to be part of the international community. Because otherwise, what will happen is you'll have nuclear people within the country who will not be transparent because they're going to be the next one to go to the camps. So if you don't have a, if you have a nuclear scientist that cannot say the truth for fear of his life or that his entire extended family is going to go to labor camp, then the negotiations on the nuclear level won't work and the conditions don't change on the ground. So that's how these two are connected. What we hope to do is continue to raise attention and pressure that this needs to be a point of discussion. And fortunately, after all of the back and forth that Mr. Trump, the president, did bring up this in conversation with Kim Jong-un, that we need to be concerned about persecuted Christians in North Korea.
And Dr. Curry, so you mentioned the labor camps, and for the 17th consecutive year, I believe, North Korea has actually ranked as the number one most dangerous place to be a Christian, according to the Open Doors World Watch list. And there's so much talk about North Korea and so much focus on Kim Jong-un, but it rarely seems to include the persecuted Christians and other dissidents in North Korea. What does life look like for them right now inside North Korea?
Well, North Korea has an old school communist system, and it's a bit of a post-communist system at the same time. So you have some of the infrastructure of the old Soviet ways. You have neighborhood watches and these kinds of things that are very, very similar to what happened behind the Iron Curtain. But yet you have a cult-like following around the leader and his forefathers. So people are expected to worship. They have a religion around it. Kim Jong-un and his dad and grandfather. So for them, it means total control over what is said, what is done. You can't have any opinions. You can't worship anybody other than the grand leader, supreme leader. There's a great deal of intimidation. Just to give you a little bit of insight, when I was in Singapore, I was in the hotel, the epicenter of the North Korean regime, and when I walked into the hotel lobby there, I was instantly surrounded by 10, 15, and eventually got up to 50 security. And I sat down in the lobby and decided I was just going to sit here and observe. And it wasn't very long before somebody sidled up directly in front of me, knee to knee, a very intimidating looking Secret Service person, just staring at me less than, 12 inches away. So in that moment, I began to understand the level, just on a small way, a small, very insignificant way, because I'm a free individual, an American citizen. I was in no danger, but it was intimidating. In North Korea, you have people whose entire lives, livelihood, and that of their family is controlled by the regime, by the police force. They'll be killed. They'll be imprisoned. Their kids could be imprisoned because you own a Bible, because you are suspected of being a Christian, or sometimes because your father was a Christian or your mother was a Christian, maybe even not that you were. So that's how difficult it is. Christians are the number one enemy of the state, considered a hostile class in North Korea.
I can only imagine what that experience would be like. So few Americans have ever interacted with North Korea on such a personal level. Dr. Curry, do you have more optimism that there is hope for Christians in North Korea now than maybe before the summit took place?
Well, as a follower of Jesus, I also wanted to be in Singapore so that we could pray. And we had a virtual prayer meeting. I was in Singapore and people around the country, country in the world. We had thousands of people. And that was just in one formal event. I know lots of Christians were praying for North Korea. My sense is that this is one of those hinges of history. That something good can happen. And it's a leap in the human sense that we could believe that something so evil could have some shifting, but we know that in the sense of if your listeners are followers of Jesus, you know, miracles can happen, hearts can change, the scales can fall off the eyes of some of these leaders. China, for a long time, killed and harassed and imprisoned many, many Christians for generations. And yet now they have a great deal more freedom. It's not entirely perfect. China's still on our world watch list. But it, by no means, I've been to China and interacted with Chinese believers. I've interacted with North Korean believers. They're totally different scales right now of persecution. Much, much more difficult in North Korea. If you're a Christian in China, you can still go to, you can go to church. You can have a Bible. Bibles are freely available. So these kinds of things can happen. So I am optimistic. And I definitely think that God is doing something on a spiritual level within North Korea.
It's just so fascinating to see some of these recent developments that I don't think some people ever expected to see. So we know that God clearly is doing something here. And you touched on this a little bit earlier, and I wanted to follow up. Dr. Curry, how can the United States ensure that securing the human rights of North Korean citizens and the denuclearization of North Korea are not mutually exclusive endeavors?
Well, I just think that as part of these negotiations, what we must try to do is to normalize relations. And normalizing relations cannot just be about taking weapons away, because it doesn't make for a social society, a culture that can interact. So you're going to need cultural interaction. You're going to need freedom. So there has to be an opening of freedom. The indoctrination right now that is expected and goes on within North Korea is intense. Those kinds of things can't really function in a free society where information is available. So there's going to have to be a shift. I suspect to succeed, it'll have to be a slow one, unless the regime just entirely collapses. But if we're talking about this process of up, I think it's going to be a slower process, but I think anything now at this point, it's so dire and desperate, anything moving in the right direction is a net positive for the individuals within North Korea. So I think if we add these kinds of things into the negotiation, the ability to inspect the labor camps, to make sure the conditions we understand the conditions now. The UN has information, Open Doors has information on what's going on there. It's not good. But if we can get some inspections there, what will typically happen is that they'll see some improvement, right? We have other things we think could be valuable as well. Having the Undersecretary of State for Religious Liberty go and meet and talk about what religious liberty, what freedom of thought is about. If we have the ability to have some dissidents released, there are some people who are in the country who perhaps need to get out of the country and have these kinds of things happen, I think would be steps in the right direction and could be signs that the government is willing to slowly open up and normalize conditions. If you don't have religious freedom, what does that mean? It means that they can't decide for themselves what they believe. That's it's not about whether or not we're pushing Christianity or some other faith. This is about, do people have the right to read the Bible and decide, do I believe that? I think people should have that decision. They should be able to have access to a Bible. They should be able to read it and decide what they think. Of course, there are faiths that force compliance. That's not the Christian faith. People can decide they agree. They can mock it. They can question it. that, in my way of thinking, under the religious tolerance that I'm hoping for North Korea, that's possible. But let's stop imprisoning Christians for believing in Jesus. Let's stop imprisoning people and killing people for owning a Bible.
Well, I know that Open Doors has a phenomenal free action guide about standing with the underground church in North Korea available at opendoorsusa.org that all of our listeners should download a copy of. Dr. Curry, now looking post-summit, do you think the words that were exchanged between the president and Kim Jong-un will become more than just promises? Will we see some action here in the coming months and years ahead?
I think we can hope so. I always take political leaders a la carte. I'm not going to have to say that I understand or agree with everything that's ever said by any particular leader. But what I do think is we had an opportunity where we got together for the first time since the mid-40s with a leader of North Korea. And the discussion in part was about the persecution of Christians and religious liberty. That's a victory. Now, to build on that, I think right is clearly in both of their self-interest. It's in their political self-interest, and that gives me some confidence that they're going to continue the discussion.
North Korea has obviously been a key focus of your attention and efforts with all of these recent developments. But Dr. Curry, could you share with us what other countries or regions of the world you might be focusing on that we might not be hearing about in the news and listeners should be aware of?
Well, some of the others would be Afghanistan, Somalia, Sudan, Pakistan. Those are the top five countries as far as difficulty this year in intensity of persecution. Meeting with some folks from Pakistan today. It's a country that could go either way. It could get much worse. They have a lot of extremists within the country. There's a great deal of persecution. There is a church there. They practice their faith is strong, but they're under attack. And Afghanistan, of course, is now larger portion, I think it's somewhere around, I'm going to roughly say 50-55% of the country is controlled by the Taliban. People will be familiar with that group. So lots of pressure, lots of persecution in these countries. You can think of Iraq and Syria as another region. But if there's one I could just highlight, Nate, that is surprising for people, the World Watch List ranks India as number 11 on the World Watch List. Now, India is a partner with us. We all know and understand and appreciate the Indian culture. People think of Gandhi, they think of peaceful revolution. But the new administration for the last 5 years has been ratcheting up, trying to Hinduize the country. They want to change the name. Even some of them are perpetuating the idea of calling it Hinduistan because they want to eliminate Christian faith in India. And there's been massive amount of attacks and violence from Hindu extremists in India. So that's a surprise for people.
That is surprising to hear. Dr. Curry, how can the Christian church in the United States as a whole maybe do a better job of standing with and aiding our brothers and sisters who are suffering because of our shared beliefs in Jesus Christ?
Well, I would like to see every church every Sunday praying for one part of the body of Christ that's under persecution. It's a biblical mandate that we're to pray for and to care for people in chains for the name of Jesus as if it were ourselves or our own family. And it's hard because there's so much bad news out there, and it's an intense subject. But I don't think we have to always approach it like that. We just have to look at it like, this is our family. We need to pray. We need to care. And then there are ways in which we can let our voice be heard, simple ways like social media, sharing important stories, praying through this, making sure you're educated on what's going on. And there's activities, advocacy things that you can do. We're talking about one of them today, where you can download the handout on North Korea, get educated on that, share some of those ideas with friends, and then be part. There are projects around the world supporting believers in places where it's dangerous or difficult or in some ways fatal to be a follower of Jesus.
And Dr. Curry, I want to follow up on that. My last question for you, as you were just saying, religious persecution and global religious persecution is such a large daunting issue. I think it can be one of those that people look at and say, well, what can I really do? I'm only one person. What can anyone really do? So, Dr. Curry, what can our listeners do right now, today, to help the persecuted church?
Well, prayer is the real battle. Everybody needs to start there. And we have prayer lists and requests that you can download and be access to that are personal, that are powerful. I think that's obvious. But we need a movement. So every voice matters. When I'm talking to the State Department, it matters if I can say we've had 100,000 Christians speak out on this and sign this petition, and we have petitions and letter writing campaigns. It wasn't that long ago that we had letter writing campaigns. We delivered letters from Christians in America to Christians in North Korea. There's ways that you can encourage the body of Christ, and I just encourage people to get engaged with that. Or on our website, we have all this information, and we'd love to have people be part of that movement.
Dr. David Curry, President and CEO for Open Doors USA, and you can find more information at opendoorsusa.org. Dr. Curry, thank you for joining us today, and more importantly, thank you for your dedication to serving persecuted Christians across the globe.
Thank you.
Well, again, if you want more information on the situation for Christians living in North Korea and those being persecuted for their faith across the world, you can visit www.opendoorsusa.org. Well, it is summer now in Omaha, which means the College World Series, a wonderful and exciting event that draws tens of thousands to the Omaha metro area for 2 weeks that just began this weekend. Unfortunately, however, along with that comes the darker reality of an increase in human trafficking. Studies have shown an increased number of commercial sex listings coinciding with major fluxes in tourism, and tragically, that includes sex trafficking here in the heartland, which increases during the College World Series in Omaha. Research has showed that every month, 900 individuals are sold for sex here in Nebraska. The existence of Interstate 80 and Interstate 29, coupled with internet sex advertising, along with the College World Series, makes the Omaha metro area very vulnerable to trafficking. And in an important effort to combat this horrific form of slavery, prayer leaders from across the community are gathering to pray to end trafficking here in our city. And they need more people to join them. You can join a prayer event in person or sign up to receive prayer points straight to your mailbox each morning during the College World Series. And you can get all of the information on the prayer events and how to join and participate and what to pray for over at the NFA website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. We have seen our state make really tremendous strides on this issue, doing a better job to combat trafficking through better awareness, outreach, support, even creating new laws to better enforce and increase penalties for trafficking, while also finding better ways to help support victims. But we still have a long way to go, and something we all can do is to continue to pray. And particularly these next 2 weeks during the College World Series is especially important. So further educate yourself, your friends, your family on the issue of human trafficking, and partner with us at Nebraska Family Alliance as we work to combat human trafficking in Nebraska. That's all the time we have for this week. For more information and resources on pro-life, pro-family, and pro-religious freedom news, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org and join the movement to advance family, freedom, and life across the nation and here in Nebraska. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.